news, potentially, if it makes it past the Seattle Supreme Court, which used to be called the State Supreme Court till they were taken over by Seattle Ideologues, a lawsuit to get you a refund in union dues. Max Nelson joins us. He's the Director of Labor Policy at the Freedom Foundation. Max, thanks for jumping on at short notice.
My pleasure, Todd. Happy to.
You guys are great. I just wanted to start by telling you I'm thankful for your organization. We've got a number of friends in common. I think I've met you. You guys are a gift. And this battle you're fighting, Max, is just absolutely fundamental to freedom and a return to constitutionalism. But you don't need to know that from me. You already knew that.
Well, this is something that we all care very passionately about, and it's a privilege to get to work with public employees around the state of Washington who now get to exercise their newfound First Amendment freedoms.
I love it. Yeah, and you know, our part-time attorney general, full-time seeker of gubernatorial campaign donations, he uses his office of attorney general as a fundraiser. He says he cares about the Constitution. So let's start here. The Supreme Court had explained, I think, that it's unconstitutional to force people to give money to labor unions to have a public sector job, correct?
That is correct, yes. So the Janus versus AFSCME decision that the Supreme Court issued in a 5-4 decision on June 27th established for the first time that as a matter of First Amendment rights, public employees cannot be forced to subsidize speech through their union dues that they disagree with. And so that affected 22 states that didn't have protections on the books already for public employees. Washington, of course, is one of them, as was Oregon and California, where we also operate. And so this affects about 300,000 union represented public employees in Washington.
Yeah, this is just phenomenal. So you've filed a lawsuit to get them a refund. How far back would this go?
Well, it's a little bit, refund is a component of it. Let me back up just a little bit. I think there's some important context for the court case we just filed yesterday. Unions have been anticipating for quite some time that they were going to lose the Janus decision or a case like the Janus decision, and they haven't been waiting idly for that to happen. They've been working on. Oh no, my gosh! Yes, they've been working very hard in Washington and around the country, both in the state legislature and doing certain things on their own to try and preemptively blunt the impact of that decision. And so in this case, the Washington Federation of State Employees, the biggest union of state workers in Washington, changed the terms of their membership forms last year. And they inserted fine print onto the membership forms that says anybody who signs this card can only cancel their membership, can only cancel the deduction of union dues from their pay during a 10-day window period. And it's calculated based on a formula from the day the person signed the card. So it's different for everybody.
Of course.
And so they made this big push, you know, before the court decision made union membership voluntary, made this big push to get all the state workers to sign this new form. A lot of people did. Either they were members already, they didn't think they had a choice in the matter. So you had thousands of folks probably around the state that signed this form. So Janus comes along last month or end of June and says you can't force people to pay dues. Now we've got state employees that are trying to resign their membership in the union only to be told, well, you can't resign. You signed this piece of paper, you know, 2 months ago or 3 months ago, and we're going to keep taking your money until sometime next year. And even then, only if you, you know, resign during your individualized window period. And so we think that's just blatantly unconstitutional. So we filed a court case in federal court. So we are bypassing the Seattle Supreme Court here in our state. We're going straight into federal court on this issue.
You agree with my terminology, Seattle Supreme Court.
I would have a hard time disputing it.
Okay.
So we're hopeful that the very strong decision that the court issued in Janus, coupled with some other case law on this issue, will work in our favor. But basically the argument is the court in Janus said you cannot take money from a public employee without their express consent. And not only that, we are recognizing that you have a fundamental First Amendment right to not support union advocacy. And so the only way for a union or a state government or a public employer to take money from you is if you have affirmatively waived that constitutional right that you have to not have your money taken from you. And there's an interesting question about whether a membership form that was signed before the Supreme Court recognized your right to resign could possibly waive that right? You know, can you waive a right that hasn't been recognized, you know, at the time you signed the card? And we don't think, based on the case law or the terminology of the Supreme Court's decision in Janus, that that's possible. So just as a matter of law, we think that unions should be getting people's affirmative authorizations, voluntary authorizations, after the Janus decision, before they continue taking money from anybody. It's basically a hard reset, if you will. It's up to the union. The burden's on the union to prove in a post-Janus world that the person they're taking money from has affirmatively waived their constitutional rights, and they just have not done that.
I love it. I love it. I also, you know, I was giggling when you were talking about the steps that they have taken to prepare for this decision they knew was coming. They also took people who are home healthcare workers. And you know, Max, you'll forgive me. Max Nelson's with the Director of Labor Policy for the Great Freedom Foundation. You'll forgive me for being blunt, but to me it was an act of thuggery. They went to people who are home healthcare workers and say, hey, guess what? You're no longer a so-called government employee, even though you never got the benefits of that, just so that we could make you join the union. Now we're going to make you join a private company that we've invented that's going to cost the taxpayer more, going to cost you more. Hey, but it's a private company, so they can force you to unionize. So they've taken those steps as well. I know that's a different matter, but I want to, you know, just point to my listeners, point out to them the degree to which the unions are willing to go to shove this stuff down people's throats. Now, if you guys are successful in this federal court thing, and thank you for taking it to federal court, that's great. Are there going to be refunds if you guys win?
Yes, we're certainly asking for that. We think any money that a union has withheld from a public employee's pay since the June 27th Supreme Court decision in Janus should be refunded, unless the union can prove to a court that the individual, you know, legitimately constitutionally authorized the deductions from their pay. And again, I just don't see any way for them to do that unless they can prove the person voluntarily signed a membership form after June 27th. So, you know, as long as they continue pulling money out of people's paychecks twice a month, you know, pending the outcome of the litigation, that could rack up to quite a sum by the time this is all over.
How much money all in do you think the state employees union are skimming? I mean, in Washington state, do you have any idea?
So the Federation of State Employees, the one involved in this particular lawsuit, takes in over $20 million a year from state employees' paychecks. Washington Education Association probably takes in twice or three times that amount or more from teachers around the state. There's a number of other smaller mid-sized unions. I mean, you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars annually.
Just in this state. And we've talked about the numbers nationally, and it's so much larger than I knew. And now, in those cases with those unions, is it axiomatic that the union, quote, executives pay themselves three to four times more than the people they represent?
That's very common. Yeah, it's incredibly common. But unions generally operate without much accountability, particularly in the public sector. There's a framework for some basic consumer protections and some basic union accountability standards in the private sector. But public employees' unions are governed by state law, and in a state like Washington, the powers that be have not taken it upon themselves to regulate the conduct of labor unions. Unions are actually in the state of Washington are actually exempt from consumer protection laws entirely. It's incredible.
Yeah, I didn't know they were exempt, but I saw that our part-time attorney general, full-time seeker of gubernatorial campaign donations, Sideshow Bob, was giving a speech at Oxford, and he talked about, I have this audio played on the show, about how he exists in life to make sure that people without resources are not taken advantage of by great big entities. And I listen to that and I think, oh my God, Bob, are you aware of the unions and the SEIU? And I believe it was the SEIU who wrote this workaround pre-Janus for Sleepy Jay Inslee, and Jay just woke from a nap and signed the thing that forced these home healthcare workers into the so-called private company. Was that correct?
Oh, that's absolutely right. Yeah, we've obtained public records from the state that go back 4 years that show that SEIU has, ever since the Supreme Court ruled in 2014 that these home caregivers couldn't be forced to join a union, SEIU has wanted legislation from our state to privatize the workforce, because private sector employees legally are the only employees now in the country that can still be forced to pay union dues against their will. So they just wanted a paper change. They wanted the state to outsource management of the the home care system, the state-funded Medicaid home care system in Washington, to a private contractor. And overnight, the theory goes, these caregivers become private sector employees, and they can be forced back into paying SEIU dues again. And so that's something that they asked Inslee for years ago. They only got it this year because this is the first time since then that there have been Democratic majorities in both the House and the Senate in Olympia.
Wow, just it's phenomenal. I don't know how people wake up in the morning and are okay with themselves doing that for a living, but I guess I don't need to understand it. I just need to be thankful that the Freedom Foundation exists. It's myfreedomfoundation.com. Max Nelson, Director of Labor Policy. God bless you, Max. You are doing the work of freedom, as your foundation says, and I greatly appreciate you popping on the show at such short notice.
Well, anytime, Todd. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, thank you. Todd Armstrong will continue on AM 770 KCTH. Oh, to the text line, 800-465-8770. A bunch of people want to know, Todd, why does the Janus decision only pertain to public sector unions? Because that was the lawsuit. The lawsuit was contained to public sector unions. There are people who are pursuing the similar path against private unions, private company unions. That case may get heard during the Trump era. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KCTH. Jake Tapper wanted us to play a game of Imagine. Okay, Jake, I'll take you up on that. We're going to play Imagine together when we come back, Mr. Tapper. It is Bumper Music by Request on a Friday. You can hit us up on Twitter, at Toddy Herman, on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Todd Herman Show, or the text line, 800-465-8770. What are the side effects of a, how do I say this? You know, we live in a high information economy. High information, high loads, high volumes of information, which also equal largely noise. We live in a low signal environment. Okay, it's very difficult to find the signal within the noise. And one of the side effects of that is that people like Jake Tapper, who is losing his way. I tell you, Jake used to be a middle of the road reporter. Yes, he leans left, but I meant leans. It saddens me to see him now just give in. And it's got to be ratings-based. Sorry, it does. It allows him to say things like this and to have it pass for observant or important.
The Trump supporters out there, imagine liberals shouting down a reporter from an outlet that they didn't like and a Democratic president giving that mob an attaboy. Would that be acceptable?
Okay. So if you want to reduce this to an interaction with the press, Jake, I guarantee you we can go out and talk to people with Fox News who have reported in Democratic strongholds, who have been spat upon and punched and pushed, etc. And did Barack Obama applaud that? Well, he applauded the side of it. He applauded going after Fox News. He engaged in it. See, you're making the jump, Jake, that you want us to imagine, that it's just absolutely unimaginable that Barack Obama would ever, let's say, push for mob violence, which you contend Trump is doing, and he's not. Right? He's expressing a frustration with the press. And by the way, Jake, this has been a long time coming. What Donald Trump is doing is what other Republican presidents have been afraid to do. All of them, save maybe Reagan. Because Reagan had a pretty damn good time toying with the press like a cat with a chew toy. But all the other ones in my lifetime have tried their hardest to duck and cover with the press, to never fight back. So you wanted us to imagine. So let's imagine this. Let's imagine a president named Barack Obama who picks one particular network and goes after that one particular network. And then let's get some historical context, Jake, so people can really understand what you're asking us to imagine has already happened.
Why President Obama is so mad.
After months of taking incoming fire from the primetime stars of Fox News.
Pull back and look at the whole picture.
You know, the Obama people hated.
It's going to cost this country a great deal of money.
The Obama White House is firing back. charging that Fox News is different from all other news.
That Fox News often operates almost as either the research arm or the communications arm of the Republican Party.
If media is operating basically as a talk radio format, then that's one thing. And if it's operating as a news outlet, then that's another.
And the White House has gone beyond words. Last September 20th, the president went on every Sunday news show except Chris Wallace's show on Fox. And on Thursday, the Treasury Department tried to exclude Fox News from pool coverage of interviews with one of its key officials. It backed down after strong protests from the press.
All the networks said, that's it, you've crossed the line.
Tension between presidents and the press is as old as the Republic. FDR was so incensed by the war reporting of one New York Daily News correspondent, he tried to present him with an Iron Cross from Nazi Germany. John Kennedy tried to get New York Timesman David Halberstam pulled out of Vietnam. And Vice President Spiro Agnew's assaults on the network press are legendary.
We have more than our share of the nattering nabobs of negativism.
So what you're asking us to imagine is doing this at a rally? Is that the great separation point, Jake Tapper, that you are asking us to believe something here is somehow out of the ordinary? Secondly, Jake, speaking of Barack Obama and speaking of the press, you do know that Obama kicked the AP Photography Bureau out of the White House, right? That he had his own photographers. You remember that, right? And speaking further to the topic, Jake, that you've asked us to imagine, you do remember that Barack Obama's team went directly after one American citizen, Rush Limbaugh. They took out billboards, and they attempted to get Rush's show canceled via a boycott in which they coordinated with leftist groups. This was after Rush said he hopes the president fails. And what Rush meant was eminently clear to me. Barack Obama wanted to remake America from the ground up because our fatal flaw in our Constitution, as Barack Obama said on Chicago Public Radio, is that we don't allow for direct redistribution of the wealth. That's one of the fatal flaws. Also, he said that we are fatally flawed because our Constitution doesn't say what the government must do for you. He coordinated with leftist groups to try to boycott Russia's program. That's doing more than cheering it on. That's being an active participant. In one of the greatest moments in radio history, Rush went on the air and said to Barack Obama, he knows the game. He's read Rules for Radicals. He understands you're going to try to pick a target, me, and separate it from its support base, which you think is my advertisers, but it's not. It's my audience. That's what Rush said. And then he said this to the president on the air. He said, I have an idea, Mr. President. Why don't you fly down here and visit me, and we'll have this out in person? Because there's nothing you can take from me and nothing you can do for me. I have all I need, and I've planned for the eventuality of a president like you, that if I need to leave, I can at a moment's notice. But he said one better. I have an idea. Why don't I fly you down here in EIB-1, which is a nicer airplane, and you can, and you and I can talk, and I'll tell you what it's like to fly in an airplane you've bought with your own money and your own effort. So, Jake, none of this is new. And I just remind you of this, Jake. And at the time, you actually stood up for James Rosen, who Barack Obama treated as a spy, a Fox News investigative reporter.
This is clearly an effort to intimidate Fox News. There's no question about that. You know, they could try to indict half the reporters in town if they were going to go after everyone who went after sensitive information.
There's Fred Thompson, God rest him. And Jake, you work for a network who leftist presidents and leftist politicians applauded when you created a 2 minutes hate against Marco Rubio in your so-called gun control debate.
If I believed that that law would have prevented this from happening, I would support it. But I want to explain to you why it would not.
You stacked the deck in that hall, and you know you did. And it was approved of by people like Nancy Pelosi and in quiet people like Barack Obama. So, Jake, we just played your game of imagine, and here's what we've learned. You've fallen off the cliff to the left, and you're trying to act like you're being observant and giving us thoughtful analysis. You're just doing the worst form of pretend scaremongering. Incrementally different Trump's approach? Yes. Revolutionary? Jake. I would say grow up, but grow down your ego. Todd Herman Show continue on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. If you ever thought there would not come a day on conservative talk radio where you're going to be compelled to listen to a topic about milk, this is insane! Mike Lee just tried to do something in Washington, D.C. You want to hear why crony capitalism? Milk! Coming up, 5 o'clock, Young Tom gets his first shot at fame. Young Tom hates orcas, and he's put together a piece, including when he chatted with a young woman who is an orca expert, and Tom told her he hates orcas. So we're gonna air that at 5 o'clock, like we did with Jeff with the G. You will get a thumbs up or thumbs down vote. It's binary, and we'll count the votes up. If Young Tom gets enough votes, Young Tom can do it again. If Young Tom fails, Young Tom will have to rethink his whole life. Well, I mean, not really. We'll give him another shot, but not on that topic. So that'll be about 5 o'clock to the text line, 800-465-8770. We shared with you at the top of the hour the breaking news that the Freedom Foundation is suing on behalf of some public sector employees who are still being forced to pay union dues in contravention to the ruling of the Supreme Court. It is great news. This text came in. Todd, as a private sector union member, I agree with the Janus decision. I don't believe people should be forced to join a union. I did it willingly, and I love my union. If I didn't want to be union, I could do the same work for another company. That being said, I believe that employees who opt out of their union should be required to renegotiate their salary and benefits package. I'm curious your thoughts on this, and thanks for what you do, Aaron. Aaron, appreciate the note. I agree with you entirely. I don't have anything to change from your statement at all. Totally agree. Text line, JJ and Burian, Twitter is Trump's laser pointer and the liberal MSM are cats. Stolen from the internet by JJ and Burian. Nice call, JJ. That is a great quote. It's absolutely true. Text line, Todd, thank you to the Freedom Foundation, Max Nelson, and David Dewhurst. Worked nonstop to get me out of the forced union at work. Treated me with respect and dignity. Because of their amazing efforts, the union did not take any dues this past paycheck. This is the first time in over 10 years I didn't have to pay dues. In my small group of 24, the unions would receive approximately $24,000 per year. Thank you, Freedom Foundation, Max Nelson, and David Dewhurst. Thank you for getting this news out. And thank you. And reminder, please sign your tweet or your text messages with your name. I never thought the day would come when in the 4 o'clock hour of my show with a mystery amount of time left in this segment. Little talk back in my ear from Young Tom. That I would want to talk to you about milk. Nope, not an ad. You are aware of the effort that the big dairy lobby has exercised to try to get people who make soy milk banned from using the phrase soy milk. You're aware of that, right? Or almond milk. So I looked into this because, of course, it's crony capitalism. Of course, it's they're trying to create a competitive advantage for themselves by using the phrase milk. Mike Lee from Utah simply said this. The federal government should not be spending money to study the word milk. If someone wants to call almond milk milk, they should do that. This amendment in Mitch McConnell's Senate was voted down.
American people, look, when you're going to have a Kahlua and Cream, because I'll have that, but I have a Kentucky whiskey. I don't want any damn, that soy milk getting in there, because you put in Kentucky whiskey with the soy milk, and instead of that Kahlua and Cream, it tastes like licking the paws of a cat after it does its business in the box. And look, don't ask me how I know what it tastes like to lick the paws of a cat after it does its business in this box. It's a private matter.
So, in a Republican-controlled Senate, we are going to continue to spend money to let the FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb pretend he's protecting consumers. Incidentally, did you know that one cup of milk and one cup of soy milk has almost exactly the same nutritional facts? Did you know that? I didn't. Here's where this gets incredibly bizarre. We know what dairy farmers want.
Consumption of dairy products, and also we have seen a significant price drop.
Patty Leonard's family has been farming in Northern Virginia for almost a century. She says non-dairy alternatives to milk are cutting into her livelihood.
Yeah, they are. People are choosing to drink non-milk milk.
They're trying to imitate milk, and I think that says a lot.
Have you ever gone to the store and said, damn it, that almond milk, it fooled me again. I thought almonds were cows.
They're trying to be what milk already is.
Okay, so they want the word milk banned. Now, by the way, Merriam-Webster's milk dictionary doesn't say anything about well, it does say about lactation. But it also provides alternatives, like definition two, a liquid resembling milk in appearance, such as the latex of a plant, the contents of an unripe kernel of grain. So that's the dictionary definition. But this is the most bizarre thing. You know, skim milk? If you try to sell skim milk that has no additives, hear me. If you try to sell skim milk that has zero additives, you don't get to call it natural milk. Truly.
Randy's an awesome guy, but now he's a little upset.
If I want to sell my customers an all-natural skim milk, the government will make me label it in a ridiculous way.
Before we explain why, we'll show you how skim milk is made. First, you need a cow. After milking it, you have to pasteurize the milk, skim the milk, add artificial vitamins, and finally bottle it. Wait, something isn't natural here. For some reason, the government forces farmers to add synthetic vitamins, even if the customers don't want it.
Reason.com video. So the same government that won't let you call almond milk milk or soy milk milk or coconut milk milk, and in fact, coconut milk has always been called coconut milk or coconut water, they will force you to call natural skim milk that does not have additives that don't belong in milk a ridiculous name that is not natural milk. But if you take natural skim milk and then you put vitamins in it that wouldn't in fact naturally be in skim milk, then it's natural milk. Now, do you want to know one huge reason that milk is expensive? Because you got to jump through those hoops. And in Mitch McConnell's Senate, we couldn't kill that. Once again, here we are on a Friday, my favorite part of the show. Your letters, emails, social media posts, in other words, longer form communication with the show where you get to really expand what you want to say to me. You could always email me, therman@ktth.com. It comes straight to me, therman@ktth.com. Or you can use the Facebook page, facebook.com/Todd Herman Show. If you want to send something private like news tips or you work for a government agency and you know about skullduggery, send it to the KTTH email address. Only I see that. And I can even move it over to a personal email address. And I'll never give up a source. I never do that. Also, you can reach us on Twitter at Toddy Herman and the text message 800-465-8770, brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. We do that stuff all throughout the show. We like to sprinkle that in through the program. Start things off with Rachel from Bellevue. Dear Todd, I heard you talking about our bike lanes over here. Yes, we do it better in Bellevue. There's a reason for that. The left hasn't quite made it over the bridge yet to come and take over our city, although they're trying. In the past few elections, they've made great runs at trying to get true socialists or leftists onto the city council. There are a few people on the city council who are far too much to the left for Bellevue's liking, but they're somewhat constrained by the fact that we haven't yet caught the fever. And I know you know what I mean when I say the fever. In Seattle, the fever was caught years ago, and I think where it stems from is exactly what you've described, a mix of laziness and arrogance amongst the Seattle voters. For many years, my husband and I lived in a really nice house on Capitol Hill. I'd be bragging to tell you how much it costs. My husband has done very, very well in the world of finance. It was always stunning to me to have block parties and talk with people about some of the serious issues facing Seattle, such as the heroin problem. Todd, this was 10 years ago. We were noticing it then. No one seemed the least bit concerned, and why would they be? Because they live in an enclave. The rulers of Seattle, a term I use quite on purpose, are very smart. They make sure that Capitol Hill and the areas in which they live are, in fact, a bubble from the madness. Now, it started to creep into Magnolia and Queen Anne, and eventually, this is going to burst over. When Seattle will change is when the street people begin to work their way into the neighborhoods of the wealthy. That, Todd, is when this stuff begins to crack. Thank you for noticing that we're doing things differently on the east side. I appreciate your show. Rachel, I appreciate your note to me. Yeah, I am impressed by Bellevue because it's a planned growth. I've had Kevin Wallace on the program before. Kevin was one of your great city council members. You can't have a stronger comparison. In fact, anything in Bellevue that's a mess isn't Bellevue's fault. Let me give you an example. Sound Transit is going to screw up getting into your city. And Bellevue had little choice but to allow them in somehow. They fought to keep them out of how they're doing it now and tried to protect the wetlands, etc. That's going to screw up your city. The other thing that's going to screw up your city, in fact, it's doing now, are the overpasses over 405. Honest to goodness, to get onto 405 sometimes is a 15-minute procedure for what should take 2 minutes, and it all has to do with the timing of the lights. That's WashDOT. Bellevue runs things better because Bellevue still runs the city with a mind of a business owner. Let's test things. Let's look at the data instead of just doing things emotionally. From a new emailer to a Hall of Famer, Adam from Coopville. Hey, good afternoon, Todd. This 3D printing thing has really caught me off guard. Not the notion of 3D printing, but the hysteria surrounding it. The ignorance of guns from the press is breathtaking. If anything, those who already want to see all guns banned are foaming at the mouth while gun owners get another look at the bias and ignorance of the left. Information will be set free in the age of the internet. I haven't seen this level of technology fear since Y2K or the movie Maximum Overdrive. The struggle seems like the futile attempt to eliminate pirated music downloads. They may get a few of the big sites, but the data's out there. Personally, I like the idea of 3D printing for other products such as auto parts, but guns that are currently being created are absolute garbage. They're a gimmick that nobody really uses, like bump stocks. Anyone with a few machine tools could make a way better firearm out of metal than this time-wasting novelty. Does anyone talk about zip guns anymore? As far as getting a plastic gun through a metal detector, you may be able to get the gun through, but unless it has plastic bullets and casing, the detector will still pick it up. They might as well start lying to pass injunctions to address the number of people killed by by ocelots. Yeah, those ocelots, Adam. Great note. I appreciate you consistently writing to the program. Yeah, the level of ignorance is stunning, but also the level of emotion. And you know what's more stunning, Adam? Is the fact that they expect us, the gun owner, to somehow be fooled by their talk of technology. They truly are, the media. They're you know what they are? They're a bunch of court jesters jumping up and down on the bottle of the information genie. Here's what I mean. Social media has allowed us to speak out. Talk radio exists. Conservative media online exists. Fact-checking exists, etc. And here you have clowns like Jimmy Acosta, a court jester, jumping up and down on top of the genie's bottle, trying to shove the information back down the throats of the American people. Also, email. Note from Cyrus. First, I thought this was my former business partner. It's not. It's not a very common name. Is it? It's a common name? No, it's not. I've only known two Cyruses. This is the third Cyrus I've met. Dear Mr. Herman, I'm a recent transplant from New York City, living here at the University of Washington, where I attend school. Has anyone ever told you that you speak a little bit like a New Yorker? I don't mean that you have an accent. I mean that you speak very quickly. I find it refreshing. My biggest complaint with Northwesterners is that they are a little bit slow in how they express themselves. I understand that sounds bigoted, and I don't mean to sound like an East Coast elitist. It's probably more my problem than it is theirs. But that's what initially attracted me to you, is the tenor of your talk. Now, getting past that initial impression, I wanted to share with you that from a young person's perspective, or at least mine, I appreciate the fact that you don't dwell all day on personalities. Yes, you discuss them, but you're much more idea-based. I don't mean to criticize anybody in your business. I think everybody probably means well. But there's a lot of people who spend a lot of time talking about this or that personality, be it the president, or be it Mike Pence, or be it this or that person. It's refreshing to hear a discussion of ideas. I particularly like your Facts Matter segment. I think that's something that you should turn into a podcast and simply present the facts. I think young people would eat that up. I appreciate you being on the air. One day I'd like to meet you in person. Congratulations on all your success, Cyrus. Hey, Cyrus, thanks for the note. I actually considered moving to New York because back in the day when I was working in tech and media, I fell in love with the city, and I still love it. I get frustrated because it's so liberal back there, and de Blasio is ruining New York. Last time I was in New York, what was it? A couple months ago. It had visibly changed. The subways had gone back to being slimy. Areas of town that had been picked up had gone back to being, you know, questionable. In fact, Times Square was kind of getting back to its seedy self. And it's just, I mean, it's only been a couple of years, it seems, since de Blasio took over. But I appreciate you noticing the speed of my speech. Some people complain about that. Last word will go today to Russ. Dear Todd, well done. That's all I wanted to say. P.S. Will you send me an autographed picture of yourself? That's not all you wanted to say. No, I don't autograph pictures. Russ, no, I seriously don't. There will never exist an autographed picture of me. That's a celebrity thing. That is something that's not ever, ever going to occur. I don't sign autographs because I am not a celebrity. I'm a rodeo clown with a radio show, but I appreciate your enthusiasm for the program. Todd Herman Show will continue with a great, big, huge round the Seattle Spirit, but do not bogart it.